important people.
Yeah, that's right. We've got the most important people. Today we have a public hearing and works. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3620 and ask Mr. Werner to describe that.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3620 comes to you from the House Revenue Committee. It was a committee requested bill. The bill was passed unanimously in the House, 52-0, a couple days ago. The bill tries to get at an issue that has come up and really kind of a result of when things developed historically. In 1995, as you recall, the Education Endowment Fund was put in the Constitution, and that dedicated 15% of lottery revenue into what was designed to be a long-term fund to build up principal and use the earnings for various investment projects. 10% of those earnings were devoted to the Oregon Growth Account, which was designed to and make investments into startups and venture capital type investments, so those that tend to have a long-term payback. Of course, in the dark days of 2002, the fund itself, the legislature referred a constitutional amendment that converted the fund into the Education Stability Fund that you have now. But the various uses within the fund stayed the same. For example, the interest earnings on the funds, the Education Stability Fund, still go to needs grants, for example, and to debt relief or debt payment on the lottery bonds that were issued in 97 and 99. So they're not actually retained by the fund. In that same vein, 10% of the dollars that flow into the fund end up in the Oregon Growth Account. And you had seen this, I believe, the flow chart that the Treasury put together and Kate Richardson shared with you during the interim, and that should be in your packet today, showing the flow of funds and where the Education Stability Fund goes. The fund itself has, as you can see down at the bottom, these are actually December numbers, so Kate may have some more slightly updated numbers for you, but the fund itself has commitments of $84 million. Currently, there's cash on hand of $11 million, 11.3 as of December of 07. The issue for you in terms of the Education Stability Fund is that if you were to need those dollars immediately for a fiscal crisis, they're essentially an illiquid asset. So you run the potential of a conflict there, the purpose for the Education Stability Fund, and the purposes of the Oregon Growth Account. So what House Bill 3620 does is requires the Treasurer to make a report to the legislature by February 1, 2009. And on the back of your sheet, there is the current statute. There is a report required. It's actually in the back of your SMS statement.
I'm moving slowly.
Okay. You can see that there is a requirement for an account. I've underlined this sub 6 there. The state treasurer shall annually submit. There is a current requirement for a report to you on the Oregon Growth Account activities, of which the treasurer is the chair of the Oregon Growth Board or Oregon Growth Account Board. But what this bill does is change that reporting requirement. It essentially asks for a number of things. Long-term estimates on deposits into the account, the projected earnings of the account, look at cash flow versus liquidity issues and when annual available cash from matured investments occur, expected performance overall of the account. It also requires the treasurer to make some recommendations to you on this policy issue of use of the Education Stability Fund and the Oregon Growth Account, their different roles. and what the recommendations are on the overall size of the account. Of course, one of the things that's happened with anything that's tied to a percentage of the lottery is that it's gotten a lot bigger than we thought it would a few years ago. Remember, the lottery grew nearly 40% last biennium because of the introduction of line games. So you have the stability fund growing much faster and the Oregon growth account growing much faster than we had anticipated just a few years ago. So the size of the account, use of declared earnings into the account, and you can see how that fits into your overall chart there where those earnings go now under current law. And management of the account in a manner consistent with the overall purposes of the stability fund. And one thing that the treasurer in his testimony to the House Revenue Committee was to add in there and the growth account. So, you know, you have these two overall purposes, and how can those potentially competing objectives be brought together. And that's really the gist of the bill. To have this report come before the committees and then have you begin to look at that issue and make some determination what direction you want to go.
Okay, thank you. We have only two people signed up, so I'm going to ask them to come together. Kate Richardson from the Treasurer's Office and William Newman. And if you want to bring anybody, Mr. Newman, you're welcome to. And then after we finish hearing from you all, Senator Morris has given us an article kind of raising some issues that I'd actually like the two of you to hear and see if you have any comments on any of those. So why don't we start out with you, Kate?
Thank you. For the record, Kate Cooper Richardson, Chief of Staff for the State Treasurer. And I'm sorry that he couldn't be here today. He's speaking at a climate risk summit at the United Nations headquarters in New York City tomorrow morning. As you know from a prior appearance during the interim, the House Revenue Committee indicated some interest in this issue. And as you also know from that hearing, the evolution of the Oregon Growth Account, the Education Endowment Fund, the Education Stability Fund, and all related entities has been kind of a long and convoluted one. as Paul indicated, that evolution's interwoven a number of different public policy objectives. And I don't think the Treasurer would go so far as to find them competing. You can have different public policy objectives, and it's how do they work together. And there have been some other changes, as Paul also indicated, with the increase in lottery proceeds over the last few years, the development of the efforts of the Oregon Investment Council, of the Oregon Innovation Council, Oregon Inc., too. That's also been a factor in the this kind of convoluted evolution. So the time is really ripe to step back and take a look at the Oregon Growth Account and all those related entities in light of those changes, and just to see where we are, if there are any tweaks to be made, that sort of thing. So this bill would provide a report to the legislature from the Oregon Growth Account Board, and the treasurer is the chair of that. It'd be due in February 2009, so that would actually fall to the successor treasurer to provide that report to you. Why did everybody look sideways there for a minute? But the treasurer does plan to, and the Oregon Growth Account Board do plan to kind of get on this sooner than later. They actually just had a workshop in the last month to talk about some strategic planning and aspects in this issue, of course, was raised there, too. So I do want to, as Paul mentioned, the treasurer's testimony in the House, he did want to acknowledge that because the Oregon Growth Account does sit in the Education Stability Fund, that on lines 18 and 19 of the bill, that management of the account in a manner that's consistent with the overall purposes of the Education Stability Fund, the board wanted to make clear, as did the treasurer, that includes the Oregon Growth Account, that there are multiple purposes kind of at play there, and they are going to take that holistic approach in their report to you. So we're supportive of that and look forward to your support of the bill.
Thank you very much. Questions for Kate? Thank you. Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Senator Burdick, committee members, and senators. The Treasurer's Office asked me to give you just a brief overview of what our fund does as an example of one of the funds that it received investment from the Oregon Growth Account. My name is William Newman, and I am a managing director of Northwest Technology Ventures, and I manage this fund with my partner, Gordon Hoffman, who is in the audience here. We are a venture capital fund, a $14 million venture capital fund. We invest in small startup companies, and our preference is to invest in startup companies that are commercializing research discoveries made in the research institutions in the state of Oregon. It's universities as well as the research hospitals and other research institutions. We've invested a total of $5.9 million to date in 15 Oregon companies, and we've clearly that doesn't cover the entire $14 million because we're retaining funds for further follow-on investments in these companies as they grow. This $5.9 million cumulative investment in these 15 companies has enabled or has leveraged an additional $103.2 million that these companies have been able to raise primarily from out-of-state venture capital sources. So that leverage is an 18-to-1 leverage on invested dollars. And those companies now employ in Oregon 214 employees, and all our businesses would be classified as high tech. We have semiconductor, software, life science companies. And so all these jobs would be good paying professional jobs, and an estimate that we've been able to make of payroll taxes, payroll withholding, in 2006 alone is approximately $1.8 million. So I offer you these numbers as an example, just of one fund that is a recipient of OGA funds, and as an example of the type of economic impact that these companies are already providing to the state. I want to emphasize clearly that we are investing for long-term gains, and we are expecting that there will be long-term capital gains from our investment. But as you can see here, the state immediately derives benefits from the job creation produced by these investments. So thank you, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions?
Yeah, maybe just a comment, Madam Chair. Thank you. Mr. Newman, thank you for coming, and thank you for that explanation that I think several of us were aware of. I am a strong supporter of the Oregon Growth Account, and I very much appreciate and I'm supportive of this bill. But as we go forward, and I know that perhaps this special session is not the time, I think we need to look at the back end of the OGA and address the commercialization fund. Because as it's currently set up, the funds, you know, come from the lottery to the stability fund, to the OGA, and then flow to the commercialization fund and not back in to the education stability fund. And I think that's a policy issue that perhaps at some future date we should look at. And I just very much appreciate the clarity and the forthrightness and the transparency of this bill, so I'm supportive. But I wanted to get that on the record that we as public policymakers should look at that in the future.
I appreciate that. I'm sure we will.
Madam Chair, may I add a point
there? Please.
Actually, and I should have mentioned that we do hope to address going that holistically to the design of the Education Stability Fund and the Oregon Growth Account. And I think you have this flowchart, although maybe not as pretty as the color version. And you will see that all the declared earnings of the Oregon Growth Account do go to the Commercialized Research Fund. That's something that we want to coordinate with the Oregon Innovation Council because the need for that fund is in question. So that is one of the points that the OGA board would like to be addressing in this report, too, and they have some recommendations along that line. I also think that I was passed out to you a summary report from 2006. Mm-hmm. That meets the requirements of the document. The annual report that's included for the OGA, that addresses that. It's a page out of our annual report. So that's the other document you got.
Thank you. Senator Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kate, you mentioned that the OGA board's going to look at all of this. Mm-hmm. It seems like that what you said is that you're going to look far beyond what the words in the bill says. Did I hear you correctly? You're going to look at a bigger picture than just what's in the bill?
No, we No, not really, in that it's the full picture, the way that the Treasurer and the OGA Board and the House Revenue Committee discussion went, that it would be looking at the recommendations in management of the account in a manner consistent. For instance, that the Treasurer is interpreting the Oregon Growth Account and the House Revenue Committee kind of concurred with that, that is looking at the OGA where it fits in the whole scheme. So it's not just the Education Stability Fund. So, and the parts that touch the OGA, and as it's relevant, it falls under those that look. So does it go beyond the bill? I wouldn't say so. It's just that there's this way of reading the words and this way of reading the words.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, what I'd like to do is ask you just to bear with us just for a couple of minutes, because Senator Morris has a report that he wants to talk to us about, and I don't want to put you all on the spot, but I thought since you're here, if you have any comments on the things that he has to say, I'd be certainly interested in hearing them.
For a copy of that report in the back?
We have extra copies.
You know, I just made copies for the committee.
Okay, so we are on the spot. Then.
You're totally on the spot. You have to go on what he says, and that could be pretty dicey.
Thanks.
Okay. I wasn't anticipating having a dialogue with you folks on this issue, but
neither was I.
But no, not a dialogue. Okay, I just thought, since you're here, if you have a comment, that
very
would
well.
Be.
But I would just bring this to the committee's attention, and I think the legislature's attention, if we could, with respect to the risks that are external to Oregon in the financial markets. And I'm specifically referring to a publication that came out, it's actually about, looks like about 6 weeks old, the John Malden's report with respect to the junk bonds and counterparty risk, credit default
swaps.
And to the extent that those financial instruments have grown from virtually zero in 1998 to over $45 trillion, and the extent that there is really loose corporate credit involved in these lending practices, and it dwarfs the mortgage lending subprime crisis tremendously. And this is just kind of background information, but I think it's worthy of taking a look at and maybe even having some comments in the future from legislative revenue with respect to these external risks and how real are they, because the statement that these credit default swaps total $45.5 trillion, in perspective, it would be almost five times the U.S. national debt and more than three times the U.S. gross domestic product. And so I think we need to be aware of those external risks. Not that we can do anything about them, but be prepared for what conceivably could happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things happening beyond the subprime mortgage market that are of much greater magnitude and potential seriousness for our economy.
Senator Weston.
Well, and if I may express some angst towards Senator Morris. He gave me this last night, and I was very happy to receive it, but it was the last thing I read before I went to bed, and, you know, I'm sick and, you know, all that. And so I tossed and turned for 2 hours, just staggered by this. I mean, $45 trillion, three times the GDP, and one of the most significant points, and this I'm not editorializing about my lending practices bill, but like the subprime issue, we have yet to get to the bottom of those losses and are almost indeterminate. You know, and the theory was that they would, well, we can contain this risk. And the quip was, yeah, we've contained it to the planet Earth. I mean, this is affects every aspect of every economy, and they really don't know the depth of this risk and this total magnitude of exposure. So, you know, we will get this to you, and it's significant and quite, eyebrow-raising. So,
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, are you looking for some analysis or feedback from the investment officers about the state's investment fund exposure
regard? Yeah, I think, if I may, Madam Chair, if we do have any investments in these kind of instruments that have been created in the last, essentially the last 10 years, I think we should be aware of that.
And I'm assuming, too, that you'd be interested to know and how our officers view this, not just the fact whether we hold them or not.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I would think so.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's why I wanted to have it just a chance to comment, because this is a completely new issue to me as of today. And I think it's something that certainly merits further analysis. And it would be very helpful if it's doable to try to figure out what our exposure is.
Madam Chair, we'd be happy to take a look at that, and I'll work with my investment officers and probably go back through Paul, if that would be agreeable,
would
or
be
directly
great.
Or however you'd like.
Through staff.
Yeah, through staff would be great.
Very well.
We'll follow up, Madam Chair.
Brand new issue for Senate Finance and Revenue.
Well, if I comment, if I could, I mean, you know, the good stewardship of the investment division at OIC, we have extraordinarily little exposure to the subprime risk. So hopefully, but this is a different type of debt instrument.
And Madam Chair and Senator West, I'm not speaking to, I haven't looked at this, I don't know anything specific about it, but as our investment officers will point out, every type of instrument or investment is not necessarily bad per se. For instance, a subprime investment isn't necessarily a bad investment per se, and so there can be a lot of nuance around those, and one of the reasons that we didn't have suffered too badly here in the subprime mortgage crisis is because the type of holdings we had weren't at risk. So that's the sort of analysis that I'll look for from the investment officers for you.
That'll be very helpful.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3620 and open a work session on House Bill 3620. Senator Morse.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I was pivoting over here. You're ready for a motion?
I'm ready for a motion.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move the adoption of House Bill 3620 and that we refer it to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse has moved House Bill 3620 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Okay. Senator Morse will carry it. Committee, we have one hearing on Friday that should go pretty quickly, and if the House acts in time on the Natural Resources Estate Bill tomorrow, in time to post it, we will also take up that bill on Friday at 3:30, my very favorite time of day.
What bill is that?
The
3618. Madam Chair, both of the major bills that the House Revenue Committee has been working on were approved by the committee yesterday. So we spent this morning preparing those bills for the floor. So we're anticipating they'll be on the House floor tomorrow and hopefully over to you by Friday.
And so my goal is to get the Natural Resources Estate Bill on Friday and then probably wait till the following Monday to do the Betsy Bill, which could also be pretty complicated. Okay. Any other business before the committee? We are adjourned.